Hello and welcome to episode 4 of History in Reverse, a father-daughter science fiction podcast. My name is Caroline and I'm here with my dad, Richie.
Hi.
Proceeding with our project of reading a science fiction book every few months or so. We took the summer off.
Right. Summer was very busy.
Yes. And we're continuing with our theme of reading stories that involve strange aliens. So we previously read Left Hand of Darkness, Solaris, and the short story, The Story of Your Life by Ted Chiang. And now we have read Speaker for the Dead by Orson Scott Card, which is a great favorite of mine.
And mine as well.
And we've both read before.
Yes, right? I've read it several times. This time I listened to the audiobook, so now I learned pronunciation of all the Portuguese names.
Oh, good! Because I was making it up in my head as I was going. This is the second time I read it, and the first time I read it, I was much younger. I read Ender's Game, and then I read this one, and I remembered a lot of details, but I also forgot some very important details about the story, but we'll get into that. So before we jump into a summary and discussion, you want to talk a little bit about Orson Scott Card and how this book came to exist.
The book, I read the introduction to the book, and he kind of tells the story of how his book came to be. So what happened was, back in the early 80s, he wrote a short story or novella, short-length story called Ender's Game, and that was published and science fiction magazines. It was very well received, and I think he won either a Hugo Nebula Award for it. Mm-hmm. While that was happening, he had this idea of writing a book about a person who speaks at funerals. So he says he's gone to some funerals and listened to some people talk, and he thought it might be interesting. The idea was that somebody would come and speak the truth about the person. Initially, this was called, Speaker of Death, mm-hmm. and then eventually changed it to Speaker for the Dead. So he tried to work on this book, and it just didn't seem to go anywhere. Now, while he was doing all this stuff, he says at one time he was talking to a friend of his who offered to write a sequel to Ender's Game, where Ender went back to Earth. Orson Scott Card did not like that idea at all. So he kind of, something clicked in his brain, and he said, well, maybe Speaker for the Dead could be the sequel to Ender's Game, right? And remember, at the time, Ender's Game was just a short work. Mm-hmm. So he wrote an outline, he gave a proposal to publish, a publisher gave him an okay, and he started working on it. And then he realized that as he was writing it, there was so much background material about mm-hmm. Ender that it just didn't seem, the book didn't seem to work. So kind of on the lark, he asked one of the publishers, says, could I write a book, you know, expand that short work to a book? And that became Ender's Game. The publisher, of course, said, okay. So in that way, Speaker for the Dead became the actual sequel for Ender's Game. Ender's Game, I think, when the novel he wrote in several months, once he's done that, he did that, he was tried to write Speaker for the Dead yet again. Mm-hmm. And then he had one of his friends read it. Basically, they didn't like it. They said, this doesn't hold together. They made some comments. The comments had to do with the children in the story. He rewrote it again, and eventually, I think, things clicked all together, and we have Speaker for the Dead.
Mm-hmm. And as a child, I read Ender's Game, then I read Ender's Shadow, and then I read Speaker for the Dead. I always loved Ender's Game. Like, that was always my favorite. On this read-through, I forgot how complicated Speaker for the Dead is. So that's one of the things, is like, we write these little outlines for ourselves, so we kind of talk about something that makes sense on this podcast. And I was trying to list, like, themes. And I have, like, 6 or 7 themes alone. And then we have all these things about structure and aliens. It's like, there's just, like, a lot to get through. And there's a lot of characters. One interesting thing I found that Orson Scott Card said recently, he was asked about why Speaker for the Dead hasn't been adapted to a film. Because
And this game has been adapted to a film. Yeah. It's actually a relatively good film as science fiction movies go.
And I actually have not seen the film, so we got to do a movie night so I can watch Ender's Game. But Speaker for the Dead hasn't been adapted, and somebody asked him about it. He said that it's an unfilmable book, basically. And what he said was, It consists of talking heads interrupted by moments of excruciating and unwatchable violence. Now, I admit, there's plenty of unwatchable violence in film, but never attached to my name. Speaker for the dead, I don't want it to be filmed. I can't imagine it being filmed. And I guess that's why nobody's tried to make a movie out of it, because he probably wouldn't sign off on it. But it is a very, it's a surprisingly complex story. And so I guess we just kind of start from the beginning and just deal with the complexities as we go, because I don't know where else to start.
Right, so the interesting thing about it is it, the universe that the story is set in is this 100 worlds. There's like a Star Congress that is like the body giving laws, kind of. And they had the Ansible, which is the same communications means that was used in Left Hand of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And we have to find out who came first.
Who copied who, yeah.
I suspect it was he copied from Ursula Le Guin. Or maybe this is just something that is became like a device in many stories. So we should talk about Andrew Wiggin, as he's known.
Should we start with Andrew, or should we start with Lusitania? Is that how you say it?
Yeah. Right, I guess, yeah. Let's start with Lusitania.
Okay. So we are several thousand years out from the ending of Ender's Game. And
about 3,000 years.
Yeah. Right. And humans have made all these colonies on these planets and stuff. And Lusitania is a Catholic colony?
It's a Catholic licensed colony.
Yeah.
So what they seem to say is that throughout the spread of humans to the 100 worlds, they never encountered another species that appeared intelligent.
Right.
Until Lusitania.
Right, exactly. So the last species being the buggers, which we'll get to when we talk to Ender.
Yeah. And the previous game. Yeah.
Yeah. So Lusitania has these creatures that are described as sort of looking like pigs, right. But being able to speak, being able to use tools. Some of them walk upright, like that kind of thing. And they refer to them as the pequeninos, right. Which is like piggies. Because of the human's history with the last sentient species, the former species, the buggers, humans are very hesitant to have contact with the piggies. There's sort of like a cultural stain on interacting.
And the contact is super, super regulated. Right. So there's only one or two people who are allowed to actually go out. Mm-hmm. You know, so the colony on Lusitania is fenced.
Mm-hmm.
There's a wall.
Yeah. They built a wall.
And humans are not allowed to go beyond it except for the
Xenologists?
Xenologists, right.
The Zendors, yeah.
And usually there's one like master and an apprentice, so there's usually no more than two, and they have very, very strict rules of what they can ask and what they can say, right? Mm-hmm. Because they don't want the technology transfer. This is kind of Star Trek Prime Directive to the nth, you know?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. They're like trying to study the piggies, but trying not to give away anything, but I mean, they have to learn each other's languages, for example.
Right, so piggies happen to be very talented in languages,
yes.
Right? Because they have several languages among themselves.
And they pick up, so in the humans are speaking a few separate languages. They speak Stark, and they speak Portuguese.
Right, because this is a Catholic colony.
Right, which I find very interesting, actually, because I think one of the themes that we're dealing with throughout the story is like the culture clash between the piggies and the humans, or like aliens and humans, right? But then there's also sort of the culture clash with the religion and the language
science,
and sort of like everything meshing together like that. So the piggies are pretty intelligent, and we start with our two first, I think they're called Xenadors.
Right.
Right?
So the important one, there was a man named Pipo, who was the Xenador, and his son, Lebo.
Lebo. Mm-hmm.
In the beginning, I guess they talk about there was a plague they called the Descalada, which killed a large number of the people who were in the colony, and there were two scientists who figured out how to essentially cure it or not make people die from it. Mm-hmm. However, they themselves died.
Right.
They were like the last ones who died from this Descalada. But they left a daughter, her name is Novinia, and she kind of became very isolated from everybody else, you know, because everybody, you know, kind of worshipped her parents, and she was kind of...
She was very little when they died, too.
Right.
She was very young. How do you say her name? Is it Novinia?
Novinia.
It's about Novinia? Oh, interesting. So yes, her parents die, and she ends up going to live with the Xenador people.
Right. She kind of is very... isolated, kind of a loner, I guess, you know. And it's kind of tough because it's a small colony. It's like a small town, basically. Yeah. And she winds up attached to Pippo. And Libo, and Pippo is kind of a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of adopts her, lets her do what she wants. And she comes to kind of love him. Mm-hmm. As he becomes like a father figure.
Yeah. And and she sort of begins to apprentice as Xanador and expects to be, you know, doing that and studying the piggies and things like that. And everything's hunky-dory and fine. Until, well, and as they're interacting with the piggies, there are these various events, like with Rooter, the
right. So the interesting thing about piggies, right? So, you know, throughout the book, there's like little excerpts from the Xanador's notes.
Yes. Yes.
And they said the piggies that they talk to, they all appear to be male,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of odd. And they talk about the wives and the fathers.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they have several languages, like there's the father's language.
Father tongue, yeah.
And there's wife's language. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of very confusing for the Xanderos trying to figure out what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, so what happens was Novinia wasn't studying to be Xanderos. She was going to be a biologist.
Biologista, yes, right.
Right, basically to take position that her parents had, which is the person that kind of studies the plants and animals and trying to figure out how to, you know, grow food, etc., mm-hmm. etc. One night, she noticed something. She was looking through the notes of her parents on the Descolada, and she understood something about how the stuff sort of worked, and she showed it to people.
Mm-hmm.
And people said, oh my God, this is amazing, and he ran out to see mm-hmm. the piggies, to talk to them about this thing that he saw. And they had these, I guess, holographic terminals where stuff shown above
yeah.
them, you know, stuff. So she had this simulation that showed him how something works. So he goes to the piggies.
By himself.
And he doesn't come back.
Mm-hmm.
And who finds him?
Both Novinia and Novinia. So the son and Novinia find him. He's on like a hilltop. And they describe it as him being vivisected.
Right.
That he's got like his chest cavity cut open and all of his organs were like taken out and sort of spread around him on the ground. And he's on his back. Now, a similar thing happened to a piggy sometime before, a piggy named Rooter.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
When Rooter figured out that Libo was Pippo's son or something.
Mm-hmm.
And when he figured this out, he got all excited and he like sort of ran away into the woods. And the next time they found Rooter the next morning, similarly vivisected. But when Rooter's body was on the ground, there was a tree growing out of the middle.
Like a little tree.
Like a sapling kind of thing.
Sapling, yeah.
So what Pippo and Libo had decided at that point was Rooter was executed or something along those lines for some reason. And the burial rites were, you know, getting executed in this horrible manner and then having a tree planted in your corpse. So that's what they understood from this. So then, you know, this happens to Pippo and he's vivisected in this way, but there's no tree.
Right.
And the lack of a tree... And the fact that he's totally dead, you know, is bad. And they take this as a sign of hostility.
Right. So now what happened to Novinia when this occurred, she realized that the thing that she showed to people somehow got him killed. She had no idea what exactly it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then she kind of hid it.
Yeah, she deleted all her files.
she didn't delete all her files, but she kind of put them behind some protection that nobody else could get to it.
Right, and then the patriarchy comes in and is a big part of the story because the...
Well, wait, so... we can talk about that later, right? So basically she loved people, so she was like, she lost another father yet again.
Yeah.
And she was also in love with Libo, the son, who clearly, you know, in the beginning you see like, you know, clearly that's going to be they're going to be an item and get married and stuff. And that's where the patriarchy comes in.
Right, and then the patriarchy comes in and ruins everything. Because basically, Novinia doesn't want Libo to find out whatever it was Pippo found out, because then Libo will die too, right? That's her thought process. And she can hide her files and lock them down from everybody. But as soon as she gets married, her husband will have automatic access to all of her files.
Well, it works both ways, right? The wife would have access to all the husband's files as well.
Right. And it's both are stupid. And it's like, it was necessary for the plot for that to be a thing.
Right.
But it's sort of, I don't know, I find it weird in a world that's supposed to be,
well, it's
3,000 years later.
It's Catholic, right? So it's
is that in the Bible? You get access to all of your wife's files when
she's, yeah, I'm sure it married. Is, yeah. So let's bring in the speaker for the dead. So what happens at the end of Ender's Game, and maybe in the beginning of this book, they talk about the office of the speaker for the dead.
Yeah.
So this is something that was started after the buggers were done, where Andrew Wiggin wrote a book about the Hive Queen. So yeah. It's called Hive Queen and the Hegemon. Mm-hmm. Or Hegemon.
I think it's Hegemon.
Hegemon.
I don't know.
Which was kind of like the next Bible kind of a thing, mm-hmm. And kind of explained an alien species to humans, mm-hmm. right? And became kind of a big underground hit, mm-hmm. with everyone. And so now this is 3,000 years in the future, and part of the book was the kind of suggested the office of a speaker for the dead, which is somebody who comes when a person dies, and he or she basically tells the truth about the person's life.
Right, they do like a little investigation and kind of get to know what's
and up. It's like, it's not to make it pretty or make it bad. It just basically say this person lived and this is stuff what happened. Mm-hmm. So Novenia at the time of People's Death is really upset, and she sends out a call for speaker for the dead to come and speak death of people.
Right. And now the thing about it is there aren't like tons of speakers for the dead or anything, and there's certainly not one on Lusitania, so one would have to come to the planet.
Right. So this is an 100 worlds, and what was the closest one?
Trondheim.
Trondheim. So yeah. That was a planet that was the closest to Lusitania. It was 30 light years away, which means that any ship traveling from there would take 30 years.
Wasn't it 22 years? Oh, something. It was a good amount of time.
Yeah, it was fairly long time.
Yeah.
And that's where a speaker was.
Right.
So she made a call, and now we move on to Trondheim, where Andrew Wiggin, who is the speaker for the dead, and his sister, Valentine, mm-hmm. have been living for a while.
Yeah.
And Trondheim is this, like, Norse kind of a planet. Yeah. Lots of fjords.
And ice. And water. Like going into the ocean and hunting stuff and that kind of thing.
The reason Andrew can get this message is because of the Ansible, which is like instant communication. So that provides like a network of communication between all the 100 worlds. Mm-hmm. And this is kind of what happened in Left in the Darkness too.
Right? Right. So what happens is we sort of at that point get Andrew Wiggin, who was Ender, who was the person that...
So he's known to everybody as Andrew Wiggin, and only his sister really knows he's Ender as well.
Yeah. Right? At this point.
And so, and the reason they're alive 3,000 years later has to do with this travel close to the speed of light. Basically, the time slows down for the traveler. So as you make hops from one place to another, if you go from Trondheim to Lusitania, and that takes your subjective time on the ship takes about 5 days.
Right.
But in time on the planet, it's, you know, 20-some-odd years.
Right, exactly. So, and I think I found that fascinating that he took advantage of the time relativity thing, because it like totally blows my mind that time is like that. So basically what we learn is that Andrew and Valentine have been hopping around from planet to planet all this time. Like, he's been speaking some deaths, she's been writing these really famous like histories and stuff of the other
world. I have some comments about all that stuff.
Yeah. So, but on Trondheim, she's finally gotten married and she's, like, super pregnant at the time. Right. So, you know, Andrew knows he's going to go, he decides to go when he gets the call from Novenia.
So, he's Novenia and he kind of instantly falls in love with her.
Yeah, which is kind of weird because she was, like, kind of young at the time, I think. But there's a great line. He sort of sees himself in her. So Ender sees Novenia's picture in her call. And he recognizes the pain she feels in feeling guilty, basically. Because Ender's been struggling his whole life with the fact that he feels really guilty about killing all of the buggers.
Right.
Even though, you know, it's sort of explainable, it wasn't really his fault. You know, he has that guilt. So he sees her and he says, "For he loved her as you can only love someone who is an echo of yourself at your time of deepest sorrow." Mm. Pretty intense.
Yeah.
There's some really great lines in here. I forgot how well written this was.
Hmm.
But basically, so he connects with her immediately because he sees in her a reflection of himself.
She's like 15 or something at the time.
I thought she was younger than that. Maybe younger, yeah.
Because she took the examination as the youngest ever.
Right, right. And she... And then because then it works out, because when the 20-some-odd years pass and he shows up, guess who's about the same age as him?
Right.
Ah, who would have thunk it? That's convenient.
That's convenient, yeah.
So he accepts the call, and he leaves Trondheim. And we get a little side story about Valentine.
Right, so the thing about Valentine, so this is kind of a whole big subplot and then this game.
Mm-hmm.
And has to do with... Valentine and Peter, who's the evil brother.
The hegemon.
So what happens in Ender's Game, Valentine and Peter keep writing these essays that are published on the networks. You know, they have a blog, basically.
The internet.
One is called Demosthenes, and the other one is called Locke. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like Fox and MSNBC.
Yeah. Exactly.
One of the things that Demosthenes was writing... i.e. Valentine, is about trying to how to understand aliens, and and she came up with this hierarchy of strangeness, and it's expressed in this I have a list here, and it's, I think those are like Norse words, also like Swedish or Norway or something.
Mm-hmm.
So basically this is the hierarchy. There's Utlanding, that's a Otterlander, so it's like it's a human that's from another country, another world. Framling, which is a stranger we recognize as a human, but is of another world. Ramen, which is a stranger that we recognize as human, but is another species. And Valeries, a true alien, which includes all the animals with whom no conversation is possible. There's something called Jur, which is diary beast, which never comes up. But basically, so I think at the time of the Bugger Wars, Demosthenes, i.e. Valentine, was arguing that the buggers were not Valeries, but Raman.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's actually, that's the question that they keep asking. Are the pigs Valeries or are they Raman?
Mm-hmm.
And
So, I mean, that sort of frames the whole story, because that keeps coming up in terms of how do we deal with the piggies? How should we be thinking about them? Right. You know, they're clearly showing intelligence, but, you know, what category do they fall into? And Valentine's side story after Edgar leaves is basically she has a bunch of kids. And then at some point, one of Valentine's students figures out...
One of the students suspects that Andrew is Ender.
And that she's Demosthenes.
Right.
No, I think the student figures out that she's Demosthenes, but then she reveals that Andrew is Ender. Because the student does, like, the math in terms of them following the student world to world. Because it really wouldn't be that hard to figure out, like, but basically Demosthenes writes a new essay every world she goes to. So you just kind of
I think she says when she got to Trondheim and got married, she kind of stopped doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Demosthenes comes back at the end of the book.
For
various reasons. Okay.
So Ender leaves Trondheim, and he takes his week to get to Lusitania, which is 20-some-odd years in Lusitania time. By the time he gets there, he finds out that Novenia canceled.
Well, so what happens is when he gets there, finds that there are a couple extra calls from speaker for the day.
Right. So Novenia canceled her call, but then two of Novenia's children.
Well, so let's talk about Novenia. So did she marry Libo?
No. And actually, one of the deaths that Ender is called to speak is the death of Libo. So Libo dies 4 years prior.
Well, so you're jumping ahead a little bit. So what happened to Novenia? Right, she apparently there was a boy in school who like everybody despised. Mm-hmm. He had some kind of genetic thing where he got very big.
Mm-hmm.
What was his name? Markov.
Marcos.
Marcos.
Yeah.
So he was very big, and he was kind of a bully. He was bullied by children. And there was one time when Novenia kind of stood up for him,
mm-hmm.
just because she was this kind of, you know, goth kid on the side that would just do the opposite of
everything. Yeah, exactly.
So
I like the description of her as the goth kid. It's accurate.
And he noticed it and he remembered it. And he kind of loved her since then.
Right.
Yeah. So she marries him instead of Libo.
Right.
Which seems kind of odd. Well, we know why. Because the reason she does that is because she doesn't want Libo to see the files.
Right, exactly. That she thinks would lead to his death.
Right. So she becomes biologista and she has a bunch of children with him, but it's well, she has a bunch of children.
Yeah. It was a little sticky in there with whose kids those are. Yeah, so she becomes biologist. She starts studying the plants and the crops and stuff.
Right, she basically does what her parents used to do, which but she's rather than she's not studying the Scholara, she doesn't want to talk about that. She's just doing like you're boring, how to grow wheat in this place and stuff.
Yeah, she loves her plants. There was a great little passage where she's like, they're awesome and they grow and they're sweet. She's really into plants.
And her husband Marcao, he becomes very kind of as the marriage progresses, he becomes kind of drunkard and kind of a violent person. Right. And
so Marcao has is how they say it in the recording.
Marcao,
Marcao has this interesting disease that is a genetic defect. That it like slowly replaces all of his organs with fatty tissue, something like that. Yeah,
and
so he ultimately like drops dead in a bar because of that.
Right, and one of his children calls for the speaker for the dead.
Right, who are the kids? Like, okay, so there are six kids. I wrote down the names.
Right,
I think this is an age order: Miro,
right,
Ella, Quim, Olhado, Quara, and Grego.
Right.
So Miro is the one that is involved with the piggies.
Right, so we still have to get back to Phoebo. Lebo, I mean.
Lebo, yeah.
And his death, right?
Right. So Lebo dies 4 years prior to Ender's arrival.
The same way his father died.
The same way his father died. He gets vivisected on the hill. Right. And it sort of causes another outcry. Because when the first xenobiologist was killed, there was a big outcry. Because it was like, oh no, the piggies are killing us. And now there's another one. His son is happening again. And, the information about it goes out over the Ansible to the 100 worlds.
Right, and they close the gate, basically, so nobody can go out.
Right, yeah. And they're trying to cut off contact. So in the time Ender was traveling, Novena cancels her call for the speaker. Then one of the kids puts in the call for the speaker for Lebo's death?
No, I thought it was Ella.
Was it Ella?
I think it was Ella for Marcao.
Who puts it in for Lebo?
One of his children, Wanda.
Oh, it was Wanda? I thought it was Miro that put it in.
Maybe Miro, yeah.
So, somebody puts in a call for somebody to come speak Lebo's death. And then one of the kids puts in the call. I think Ella puts in the call for Marcao's death. The point being that they thought it was going to be like way longer before the speaker showed up.
So they make a call and he shows up like next week.
Right, exactly. And it's like really awkward because normally, the speaker's coming in later and the person's been dead for a long time and people are maybe more willing to talk about it, that kind of thing. But he's like, and you're sliding in right on the heels of Marcao dying. And it's like all still very raw, the way the family was and everything like that. So, once Ender gets there, he starts his investigation He starts with Marcao's death. So, he's there for three deaths.
Right, so no, I was wrong about when the contact is cut off. So, what happens is Miro, who was apprenticed to Lebo, becomes the new Xenador.
Right.
And he and Wanda kind of are the two who go out to talk to the piggies.
Right, but they're breaking the rules anyway when they talk to the piggies. Right,
so...
They're breaking a lot of rules.
Right, when you have a piggy named Arrow, you know something.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit. Let's get the
initial investigation.
Right. So Ender starts. He basically just goes to the house, to Novena's house, and starts meets the kids and befriends them because he's awesome and everybody wants to
be his friend. Right, so this is like one of the scenes that I kind of like because I like these kind of melodramatic thingies where Grego, who was the little kid who, despite his father being really like a mean guy, he still loved him and he missed him terribly and he expressed it by just being mean to everybody else. He was just like his father.
Yep.
And his father.
Yeah.
Air quotes. So when he Ender shows up at the house, he attacks him with a knife.
Yeah, that's right. He has a knife taped to his leg or something. Right? Ridiculous thing.
This is, you think, like a 5 or 6 year old, right?
Yeah, he's a little boy.
So Ender kind of disarms him and puts him on his, it kind of holds him very hard on his, while he's sitting and talking to the kids. Mm-hmm. And of course, the kid, Gregor, can't do anything else, so he just pees.
Yeah.
through his pants on Ender. Ender, of course, just ignores him. So he kind of wins him over in a way. So
yeah, and the kids are like, you know, suspicious of the speaker at first. So
everybody's suspicious, right? Because it's a Catholic colony, and the speaker is kind of an atheist
kind of hippy dippy kind of thing. It's being the speaker is not quite a religious position.
Right, it's definitely not a religious position.
Right, but it's not like it's like Catholic and Protestant or something like that, right? It's almost like void of religion in a way. It's very threatening to like the priests and things like that, and like the people that are living in this sort of Catholic society.
So one of the first things that Ender does, or Andrew Wiggin as he's known, nobody knows he's Ender.
Mm-hmm.
He goes talk to the doctor. Right. And the doctor that explains to him how Markala died.
Mm-hmm.
Then he finds out that has this genetic disease that does some bad things to him. One of the things he said, this is something that he's had since he was a child.
Right.
And one of the things this makes makes him infertile, because he can't have any children.
Right. But the doctor says, he's got 6 kids, so he must have just had like a different version of the disease or something, and like explains it away. And Andrew's kind of like, well, that's mighty interesting that he would have been infertile. And then so I think also in the conversation with the doctor, it's revealed that, because the doctor's sort of like, it's so unfortunate that this happened. You know, Novenia didn't know he had this genetic disorder, but she could have known because her parents did genetic scans of everybody when they were curing the Descalada.
Oh, that's right. And she has access to all those files.
And she would have had access to it. And it's so unfortunate that in her ignorance, she married this man without checking his genetics and knowing that he would have this problem, that he would, you know, die from this ultimately, and this tragedy of his death would occur. And Ender's like, well, that's interesting. Because it sort of becomes apparent that those children are not Markala's children.
Right.
And those children are Lebo's children.
Right.
And Novenia, knew Markal would not be able to.
Right. I mean, I think it was kind of, she wanted her cake and eat it too, right?
Right, yeah.
So she didn't want to be married to Lebo, so she wouldn't have to reveal anything to him.
Mm-hmm.
But she still wanted to have Lebo.
Right. And Lebo was married too, right? He had a wife.
Yes.
Bruxina?
I forget, but he had a daughter named Wanda.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I guess just to explain it now, so Lebo's daughter is Wanda, and Novena's son is Miro, and Miro thinking... You know,
Miro and Wanda are an item.
Yep, Miro and Wanda are they
However, age? However, being a good Catholic, they had not consummated anything.
Sure. All that alone time in the woods. Okay. But... so they were seeing each other. Were they engaged?
No, I don't think they were engaged, but I mean, it was kind of assumed
they were going to get together. And that's a problem because they're half siblings and they don't know that until later. But so, Ender's doing this investigation.
I think he basically he talks to Lavinia, he talks to the kids. I think. Like Ella, I think, speaks to him on the side about some of the stuff that's gone on. So that's how he figures out the thing about Lebo.
Mm-hmm.
I think Quinn is the one who's like super, super religious.
Mm-hmm.
And he, what does he call him? Does he call him Antichrist or something?
No. I know what you're talking about, though. I forgot what he calls him, but he's like not about having the speaker. Yeah.
Right. And then there's a whole subplot with this whole order, the Children of the Mind.
Yes.
And which is like a monastic order within the church. And actually he meets with the people who run it and he tells them, you know, I spoke the death of the founder of this order 2,000 years ago.
And they're like, whoa. So, I mean, I think that's one of the, that sort of gets into one of the themes of the introduction of the religions throughout this, because there's sort of like the presence of Catholicism, then the speaker religion thing. And
it's more like a Zen Buddhism kind of a thing. Yeah. There's really no religion.
Right. It's a way of life. Not even a way of life, but like the speaker tradition, I guess.
Yeah.
And then the spirituality or the perceived spirituality of the piggies, which isn't quite really spirituality.
Right, it's funny, we're talking all about all these humans and ignoring the piggies.
Right. There's so much here.
And the children of the mind, which is like this new religion, which I thought I liked that, because very often in these science fiction books, they just have the old stuff. They never
right.
come up with some new religion. So this is like a new order, you know, with some history and yeah. stuff, which is kind of cool.
There's so many aspects of the story that blows my mind. Yeah, so it's like the one of the things about Andrew coming to Lusitania is that everyone's sort of hostile to him because of this sort of religious issue.
It's like an outsider kind of poking his
right. And I think he sort of has some internal monologue about it, and like thinking about how they're all expecting him to be like one way, they're not expecting him to know anything about their religion.
Well, also we haven't mentioned Jane.
I was just thinking, we totally forgot about Jane. Do you want to explain who Jane is?
So Jane is this artificial intelligence entity that came to be amongst the, you know, the in the Ansible network, mm-hmm. among the multiple worlds, and she kind of became friends with Ender at the end of Ender's Game, mm-hmm. and he carries a little crystal in his ear that he can talk to her, and she can tell him stuff, and of course she has access to anything you want on the computer networks. Anything at all.
She's a really great plot device.
Security, it's like a djinn, right?
You know? Yeah.
Security protocols don't matter. She can just get past everything.
Yeah.
And so she's actually, you know, the part of the whole book is she's yet another kind of
life.
Intelligence, mm-hmm. life, right? But she basically helps him providing information and stuff. Except at one point, she gets a little bit snarky and he turns her thing, it turns her off, mm-hmm. and she kind of says, and she goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so she has to kind of deal with everything just on his own.
Yeah.
For a while.
She's fascinating. She asks him, she wants him to speak. No, she wants him to write a book on her.
Right. So.
Yeah. In the beginning, she says that her one of her goals is to have him write
right.
a book on her.
Right.
And her. And like nobody else knows she's there. So she revealed herself to Andrew Wigan, you know, knowing that he was Ender,
right.
Who is like the source of the Xenocide of the buggers, and because she thought he was the only one who would like understand her as a life form,
right,
and like give her a shot,
right.
So, and then I mean, she's been rolling with him all this time,
right. And the sort of the idea, the character of Ender in these books is like Hitler to the end,
right? Exactly.
Everybody thinks Ender is like the worst person ever.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
and you know who else we didn't talk about yet, which we should, is what Ender is carrying around in his little backpack with
right.
him. So I'm trying to remember, at the end of Ender's Game, Ender goes to which planet?
He's guided there by the game that he played.
Right,
right.
This
so.
The giant. So he goes to this planet and finds the last bugger hive queen,
right?
Basically, and
she's not dead.
She's there. She's like in a little bundle, and she's like, "You gotta find us a new home to start. Like this is how you can atone."
Right,
for...
and she can communicate with him telepathically,
right.
basically.
So he's been carrying her around in a satchel. He's been
trying to find
a home for her, so, which is what the reason, as the impetus of why he and Valentine were jumping from world to world to world,
right.
trying to find somewhere where the Hive Queen could restart the whole bugger species. And the Hive Queen is a big part of why Ender accepts the call going to Lusitania, because she says it's perfect.
Right.
You know, that's where we've got to go. That's it. That's going to be where we
right.
can be, and I can be reborn. And you know, one of the things that I think was interesting about the time relativity is that to Ender, you know, and to the humans, there's this time relativity issue, but it's not to the Hive Queen.
Right.
The Hive Queen says she's lived every day of these 3,000 years waiting.
Right.
It's kind of, like, crazy. Because I think, like, while he's traveling at light speed, he can't communicate with her because the telepathy
doesn't... Yeah,
doesn't
yeah. work.
So it's kind of bizarre. Then on top of all this other stuff that's happening, Ender's wondering if Lusitania is the place where he's going to restore the Hive Queen
right.
and restore the bugger species.
So meanwhile, while he's there, he also wants to go talk to the piggies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think maybe it's Miro and Wanda that tell him, you know, one of the piggies is picking name Human.
Human. Mm-hmm.
Right, it's there, and he's telling him that he's been talking to Ruder, and mm-hmm. Ruder knows that the Hive Queen is here.
Right.
And Ruder was the guy, the piggy that was killed
way back in the beginning,
and there's a tree where he was planted.
Right.
Well, he...
Oops. There's a tree that they must have planted in his body.
Right.
Let's go over this. A few piggies. There's Ruder, who was the first one that was eviscerated. There's Human.
Right.
So the piggies will take, like, English names, I guess.
Stark names.
Stark or Portuguese names, but, you know, whatever. There's Arrow.
Right.
There
was another one who was, like kind of
competition. Leaf Eater,
right.
Mandachuva is
another Mandachuva, one? Right.
Right.
Yes.
And I think those are the main ones. So Ruder died, there is a tree where he died. Someone else was also, there was another piggy that was eviscerated, or vivisected rather, because there were two, weren't there two growing trees? I thought there were two.
Later.
Well, okay, later. Oh, I thought there was another one in the meantime. Okay, well, so there's Ruder, who has been dead for 20 some odd years.
Right.
And there's the tree. And so, yeah, so Ender talks to Human, and...
Well, so, yeah, Ender goes and meets the... I think Miro takes him to meet the piggies, which is kind of against the rules.
Mm. Well, Miro and Wanda have been doing, like, against the rules things with the piggies to teach them how to...
Right, so...
churn butter or something, right? Like,
well, this was, like, a kind of a plot device, right? So, idea was that the Catholic colony and the bishops and stuff didn't like Ender.
Right.
And considered him an enemy. And Jane suggested, you know, maybe if you have a common enemy, or Jane thought that if they have a common enemy, then they'll work together.
Right, exactly.
<That's better>. And so what she did, they had satellites that were observing the planet, just, you know, as standard kind of procedure. And she noticed that there are some areas of the, in the plain and in forests where the piggies lived, were getting, like, planted all of a sudden. And all of a sudden, there were more piggies than in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that Miro and Wanda were kind of doing some technology transfer.
Yeah.
Which is why we had a piggy named Arrow, and and they taught him how to... They developed some seeds that could be planted there, and they could, you know...
Yeah, they were teaching them how to do that.
Have larger population and so on.
Which
is very against the rules. But nobody noticed, because this is like in a stream of data coming from some planet in some corner. Who cares?
Right.
So Jane brought it to attention of somebody.
So then...
But in between this all, did he speak Marco's death, right?
Yes. So he speaks Marco's death, and... I think unfairly reveals the infidelity, and that kind of makes everyone upset. But this sort of gets to one of the big themes in the story, which is the importance of truth. Secrets, right? Because, like, the piggies keep secrets, the humans keep secrets. They keep secrets from each other, they keep secrets among themselves. And sort of the whole role of the speaker is to come and, like...
Uncover it,
and also make the point that, like, honesty is the best policy, basically.
Truth will set you free.
Right. Which is kind of like, I mean, everyone's okay with it ultimately, but...
Well, not really. Like, Mira and Wanda get really upset.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, they're glad they're not accidentally married half-siblings. That's probably a good thing. But I know that Lebo's wife gets upset, too.
Somewhat, yeah.
And Novenia's upset for a bit, but she ends up being okay with it. Because it's like the truth will set you free.
Well, because for her, she didn't have to hide this so much.
Right. Is this at the same time when they figure out the thing she had discovered? When did they figure out that it was the thing that led to the deaths of both Pippo and Lebo? Like when they...
No, that's the very end.
That's after this?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I don't remember. I got the timeline confused. Because that's really her... absolution of guilt, so that's later. But I wanted to say about the piggies, this thing that's sort of going on throughout, and like the way we're talking about it is really from the humans' point of view in terms of like You know, they killed Peepo, they killed Leepo, they killed Rooter. You know, they, this thing with human talking, saying, you know, the Rooter says whatever. Every time the piggies would refer to, like, some of their trees as people, or, like, with names, or saying, like, oh, they're saying this or whatever, all of the Zenitors across the generations...
say the totem...
Right, they're, like, totem trees. They're, like, spiritual, and they're worshipping them or whatever. And at no point in time is any thought given to the fact that, like, they might actually be talking to these trees.
And there's a tree language, right, with banging on a tree. Right. And they just say, oh, it's just, like, you know, music or something.
Right, exactly.
Some, you know.
Yeah. And so they don't ever think for, like, a second that maybe...
And then he drops hints about the whole biology of the planet, because there are a couple of... First of all, there's very few species on the planet, right?
Right.
And both animals and plants. So there's the piggies, there's the cows, whatever they
call it. The cabras.
So,
yeah.
And there seems to be, like... And the water snakes.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be, like, relation between the particular plant and particular animal, like mm-hmm. the water snakes. There's like plants that grow by the river,
mm-hmm.
and there's one kind of bird.
Mm-hmm.
There's really not much else, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, they talk about how there's like really not a lot of life there. So yeah, so there seems to be, and there's like, you know, the piggies who live in the forest. So there's all these trees everywhere. Shocking. What about the cabras? Is there something for them?
Yeah, there was. The plains had like grasses.
Oh, that grass that has no nutritional value. Yeah. That was one thing about Lusitania, is that there's like all this grass. There's all these like the crops and things there aren't really useful for humans. Like the milk, the cabra milk doesn't. Oh, see, that's a connection. The cabra milk has no nutritional value for humans, and then the grass has no nutritional value for humans. Oh, see, discover things as you talk through. There's so many pieces to this. I love it. I love stories like this. Okay, so Jane rats them out.
Well, so Jane rats them out, and of course at this point Jane is already not talking to Ender.
Yeah.
And so the Starways Congress says, "Oh my God, stop immediately doing mm-hmm. this. We're gonna cut you off.
Yep.
We're gonna erase all the colony's files if you don't follow our instructions." Now they can't just go there, because it's like 20 years from the nearest planet.
Right.
But they can. And so they threaten to erase all the files, and of course everybody panics.
Right, and so basically what Jane wanted happens, right? They all, because right. Starways Congress is like threatening them and threatening like evacuation and like that, everybody on Lusitania suddenly becomes best friends.
And this says, look, I can save your files. Where did he?
I don't remember.
There's this whole big thing about him copying everybody's files.
Yeah.
To like his local computer or something.
Yeah, yeah. He does something so that they don't lose all the information.
Right.
But then don't the colonists cut themselves off?
No, so what happens is there was a period where Jane was not talking to him.
Right.
And then she comes back and says, "I'm still here, you know, don't worry about it. I can manage, I can keep the connection up, even though it's gonna look as you are cut off."
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of saves the day there,
mm-hmm.
and he helps them not get the files deleted.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think it was like some crazy thing, but his emails are protected.
Yeah,
so you just email him all the files. They'll just sit in his email inbox.
Yes,
and nobody's gonna delete it, right? And they had to like go quickly and mail stuff. You know,
we forgot Miro on the fence.
Well, that's kind of getting to that,
yeah.
Right? So. So here we are, right? So they kind of getting cut off.
Mm-hmm.
But they found out that Mira and Wanda are...
Half siblings.
Siblings. So
yeah.
So they can't really get married. So they're upset. And then they get cut off from the piggies. And Mira just says, forget it. I don't care.
Yeah.
I want to go see them. So mm-hmm. he climbs over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
And the fence is like electrified or something, so
yeah.
he gets like really seriously damaged, and mm-hmm. he falls on the other side of the fence, and he's lying there to die.
Yeah.
And you know, everybody freaks out, and they meet the piggies inside the fence,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, how the hell did you get here?
Well, it was implied earlier in the story.
It was hinted at earlier, right?
Yeah.
But basically, it turns out there's some grass that some of the grass that can chew. They have some like a drug essentially that kills. They didn't say it stops the pain, but it makes you not care.
Yeah.
So they've been going to the colony all the time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite work as well on real humans, but it does on piggies.
Yeah.
So I think Jane opens the gate for them, so they go can go and rescue Mira. So he doesn't die, but he's like crippled.
He's paralyzed, yeah.
And so then the Ender finally goes talk to Piggies, and the Piggy says, could you please write a story about us?
Yeah.
Right, like you wrote about the Queen and the Hegemon. And of course, then they go and explain all the other stuff. So they take Ender to meet the wives, and they finally explain what the trees do. So why don't you explain that part?
So the tree thing, this has to do with like the Descalada and sort of, I love the way the story works, because Orson Scott Card like laid all the pieces out for you, but until it's sort of put together, it's like, of course, none of it made any sense. So what happens is the piggies have three life stages.
Right. And all the actual animals on that planet do.
And so it's sort of this, and this is why I think there might be a metaphor with Marsau, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, they go through these sort of like metamorphosis kind of stages where they, as part of their life cycle, become different things. And so for the piggies, for example, they become the trees.
Well, they start as little worms living on a tree.
Yeah.
Then they turn into a piggy.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, they get planted and become a tree.
Now, no, not all of them get vivisected, though, right? Because most of them become brother trees.
Right. Then to become a father tree, you have to be get some great honor or something.
Right, exactly. So because the brother trees are just like everybody sort of has that step, unless you're deemed to be worthy of becoming a father tree, because then the father trees lead to the reproduction. So they sort of are selecting.
Right, they bring the wives to the father trees. You know?
Yeah, yeah. So the vivisection thing that we saw in the very beginning with Rooter, so Rooter got to be a father tree because he was smart and figured out that Lebo was Peepo's son.
Right.
And so when he like was intelligent enough to figure that out, he got the honor of becoming a father tree. Right. And so then as a father tree, you know, when he's talking to human saying like, hey, the tree is talking to me, it was never like it's not a spiritual thing.
Right. It was an actual thing.
It was actually communication happening.
And they actually talked to the show Ender how they use trees to produce tools and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they ask the tree to transform itself, you know, into something. And the tree dies at that point.
Right.
But it gives them tools and stuff. So that's how they make things.
Do you want to explain like the wives a little bit more? Because that Ender meets...
The wives are very confusing, so it was...
Yeah. That's why I'm asking you to explain it, because it confused me.
Right, so there were these these larger piggies that kind of basically attended the tree where the little baby piggies were living.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived inside the tree
mm-hmm.
until they eventually come out and then they grow up. And then the wives were taking care of them. But I kind of forgot how exactly was the interaction between father tree and the wife to impregnate things.
I don't know if he tells us exactly.
No, it's like...
No, it's kind of like, things occur. There are trees. That's not important. Look at how it transforms. So,
but the thing is, this kind of cycle of from animal to plant occurred in all the species on Lusitania. And then they realized that. So we forgot to mention that one of the things that Wanda and Miro did, they gave the piggies copy of the Hive Queen and the Hegemon.
Right, which is one of those things where it's like, if we're trying not to like influence them culturally, gave them a printout of the book.
what Miro and Wanda did, think this is ridiculous rules. Yeah. Of course, you know, they're ramen, they're not...
Right.
Valeries.
So the thing about giving them a copy of the Hive Queen and the Hegemon is that then they've had the books for a while, and then Ender comes to the planet with the Hive Queen.
Right.
And like you were saying before, the Hive Queen is communicating telepathically
with Rooter
and with the other father trees, I think.
Right, probably.
And part of the Hive Queen realizing that this is like the perfect place for them or whatever is the fact that there is that communication.
Right.
So, which has all kinds of implications for themes again. There's so many themes.
So then, sort of the climax of the book is right. So the piggies ask Ender, you know, saying, can you please write the book about piggies?
Yeah.
Like you did for the Kaiju Queen. He says, of course I will. And they draw like a contract or a treaty, I guess, between the two species. Like you know, he says, you can never plant another human, please.
Oh, yeah. So they had to explain to the piggies. And the piggies were horrified when they realized they had killed. They were like, oh, we did not mean that. What did they think when a tree didn't grow? Like, what? So they agree to not do that. And I think, wasn't one of the details that, like, the only reason that people in Libo got planted was because they refused to plant?
Right. So what happened was for this treaty to be kind of signed, they said, well, Human is the one who kind of was the leader negotiator. He says, so now you, he said to Ender, now you have to plant me so I can become a father tree.
Right.
What happened to people in Libo is they got in a similar situation and they refused to do it because they didn't understand what it meant.
Yeah, they thought
they thought they were killing them, so they would rather die than be killed than kill. And that's what the piggies did to them. So there's this whole scene which probably in the movie would be rather gross.
Yeah.
where Ender actually goes and plants humans. So they give him instructions how to cut and stuff. And you know, they chew on this grass so that they feel the pain, but they don't care.
Right.
While this is happening, and then he becomes a second tree next to Ruder.
Right.
I think
that's the second tree I was thinking.
Right.
And so then there's this contract, and the contract involves the humans, the piggies, and the buggers. Or no, did they not mention the buggers in the contract? I don't remember.
I think it's only between humans and piggies.
Yeah. Because obviously the piggies are aware of the hive queen, and Ender is, but I don't think any other people are.
So the thing that I thought, getting back to Miro. Right, so poor Miro got paralyzed, which is kind of convenient for Wanda.
Why is it convenient?
Well, because it's like, you know, they...
Well, now they really can't be together because he can't walk.
Right, right. So one of the things that they wanted to do, though, is you know, they wanted to send somebody to Star Wars Congress to kind of argue the case.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane reveals herself to Miro, and he kind of dumps Ender and transfers to Miro.
Yeah.
And, of course, Khalees, he and Lavinia are becoming an item.
Yeah. Hold on. Shocker.
Right. Which was kind of
nice.
Who
would have thought that?
Yeah,
so it ends with Ender and Lavinia sort of being together.
The larger kind of picture was, though, that Lusitania is in rebellion, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
And all of a sudden, on this planet called Trondheim, Demosthenes starts writing stuff.
Yes.
so technically, that, you know, as far as everybody else is concerned, they cut off from the rest of the world, and they're planning to send a fleet to, you know, remove the colony and stuff. Valentine calls Ender and says, "Listen, I'm coming down."
Yeah. see you in a few.
See you in a few. And it's just kind of funny because when he talks to her, she's, you know, 20 years or 30 years old or whatever. And he's still fairly young. And she says, well, you're going to catch up to me. So, because I'll be there in a week, my time.
Oh, yeah, true.
20 some years, your time. And basically, they're trying to argue that, you know, piggies are safe. And then the Descolada is kind of the interesting thing. So it's the disease that killed a whole bunch of people in the beginning of the colony. And these two biologists came up with a cure, but it turns out that it's not really cured. They just kind of basically they carry the virus and they have immunity or something.
Yeah.
And if this thing were to spread elsewhere, it would be really bad.
Yes.
So, you know, the planet kind of probably has to be quarantined. And
right. So that's kind of one of the issues Ender thinks about in the beginning is sort of like, where is he finally going to stop? Like, when is he finally going to stop jumping from planet to planet? He kind of has to now, because he's been exposed.
Well, I think that they give some hints that this stuff may be, you know, if they can study it again, because Lavinia kind of cut it off totally.
Right.
Maybe they can figure out a better way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that people from Lusitania can travel elsewhere.
I also kind of wonder if it has implications in terms of the piggies being invaders, right? Because you know, the issue with the buggers was that they spread lots. They were, like, on multiple worlds, and there was, like, that threat.
Mm-hmm.
But if the piggies... I mean, I guess if the piggies left Lusitania, they would bring the Descolada with them?
Right.
But can they exist outside of Lusitania?
I don't know.
That's the thing.
The thing is that they actually keep asking for spaceships and stuff.
Yeah,
like
they ask for metal. Yeah, they want... Because they're in the colony. They're totally in there. I think, like in terms of, like, events, that's pretty much
right.
Gets us to the end of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think what happens... Well, Miro's going to go back to the Star Wars Congress, so I don't know how they're going to deal with that with the Escalada.
I don't know. I think it took us, like, over an hour to to talk. We're just about an hour to talk about the facts. Okay, so we'll take like another 20 minutes or so to discuss it.
Okay, so
we hit a lot of the big points.
We forgot to mention that in the end, kind of, he talks about writing another book called The Life of Human.
Right, exactly.
Which is then spread by Jane throughout the 100 worlds.
Right, and he does he places the Hive Queen on Lusitania, so she's able to start the buggers again. So, you know, we've talked about the aliens and everything like that throughout. So there's actually, I guess, like four alien kind of things happening here. We have humans.
Right.
Buggers, piggies, and Jane.
Right.
Right? And it's, I think, sort of the theme, we're about to get into a lot of themes. I think sort of one of the major themes is this interaction amongst the alien species and their understanding and misunderstandings of each other.
Right.
And the fact that really all of this drama could have been avoided if the original Xenadors...
Just asked.
Right. Had any kind of, like, had thought anywhere outside of their own box.
Right.
Right? Because it was just like, oh, Ruder's dead. He must have been executed. And they knew it didn't make sense because throughout the story, everybody's like, they talk about this person as if he's...
Still around.
Or they say that this person is bad, but then in another sentence they say he's good. And the way they talk about the wives is very strange. And they sort of knew that something was amiss. But none of that, like, suspicion led them to question their, like, initial core conclusions. Which I think is kind of a theme of Ender's Game as well, is this needing to be able to really open yourself to understand an alien species.
Right. And like I said in the introduction to this book, he talks about anthropological science fiction, and he mentions actually a book that sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm. I have been wondering for a few days if there's a metaphor with the way Markow dies and his genetic deformity that's like his... Because it's sort of similar to the creatures of Lusitania in that his body is transforming into something else. Mm. But... I don't know. I haven't been able to parse out anything beyond that. I think it might have just been for the story.
I think you maybe read it too much.
We talked a little bit about religion already.
Well, it's kind of interesting setting, like, that there was a Catholic church with bishops and stuff.
Yeah, it was weird. When we get to highlights and lowlights, I have thoughts about it. But, it was interesting to read a future set science fiction story that had all this religion stuff. Because, like, what's, like, 1984? I can't think of the word. I keep thinking Descalada. That's not
dystopia.
It. Dystopia. dystopias often deal with, like, these social issues and then religion and that kind of thing. Because it's sort of, like, on Earth and you have, like, that kind of scenario already. But here we're talking about a colony that's on, like, another world... 3,000 years from Ender's
Game. Right, but I mean, that's what makes it kind of fun. Sometimes, like, I hate to mention Lem, but he's got a couple of stories where he mixes up religion with some ridiculous science fiction, and it's kind of funny.
It's interesting.
I mean, Lem tries to be funny, I think. Orson Scott Card is a Mormon, so he's...
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I think one of the questions too would be like, how do you reconcile religion with like a regular sort of serialized religion like Catholicism, where there's like these particular rules and particular beliefs, with like interacting with an alien, you know?
Well, right.
Like where, so, like
that,
how
that's
like,
part of the interest, right?
Right, and I think it's fascinating, and the fact that, you know, the colonists were quite afraid of the piggies. But they were also quite afraid of Ender, right?
Well, they were afraid of outsiders, right? So
this
is like essentially a small town, self-contained on this whole planet, right?
Yeah, so I liked all that.
Well, except there was the Children of the Mind, which was like a separate... It wasn't quite Catholic. It was like its own religion, but it was still within...
Yeah, it was interesting. I kind of wonder if that use of the religion sort of grew out of the fact that the history of the human interaction with the buggers and humans having been so afraid of the buggers and everything. And, like, while Ender went down in history as, like, this, you know, Hitler to the 10th degree, there was also still this, like, you know, there's like this lingering fear in.
Well, the other thing I just thought about this is, you know, the fact that there's a Catholic colony on this planet separated from everybody else. This is like the Mormons going to Utah, you know, to get away from everybody else.
Yeah. Well, do we have any indication that the Catholicism is not a thing on Earth anymore? We don't really get any indication. We don't know. So I don't know, maybe, I mean, so we know that the Lusitania colony was settled with a Catholic license, like we're told right off the bat.
Right.
So, I don't know, it's sort of like this fear of outsiders kind of thing. It's almost like the religion is used as a tool to continue that separation. Like, we are the Catholic colony, you are the speaker for the dead, you know, like, and then, you know, as almost as a tool. Right. So it's fascinating. So a few interesting sci-fi ideas. We've talked about Fusion and the Ansible being the instant communication. We've seen that.
Well, the Ansible existed elsewhere. Somebody like Jane, those kinds of entities appeared in many places. Right.
Time relativity, which is just...
just physics.
Neat. that's real. That's not a science fiction idea.
It's
never
just
mind.
Science.
I noticed this. I don't know if you remember this. It was sort of a throwaway line. When Ender's traveling from Trondheim to Lusitania, he thinks about how he thinks personally that light speed travel is going to end up being like bad for the universe. That's going to lead to like universal global warming or something, you know?
Right. That's right.
How he's like, he has this sort of great image where he's like, we won't even know until like it's way too late that we're affecting the universe. Because what if my light speed travel is killing a star? But I won't know the star is dead for millennia because of the light and the rate the photons are coming at me.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I remember that. Yeah.
And it didn't go anywhere, like it didn't come up again. But I thought it was like a fascinating concern for Ender to have. Of everything else going on, he's like, oh, I think the gas mileage on this starship is not going to pan out to be very good. So one of the big themes for a lot of our characters is finding a home and what is it to be home, you know, that kind of thing. So we see it first with Novenia. Once her parents die, she sort of loses her place. And she kind of loses her place for, like, the rest of her life in a lot of ways.
Well, she loses it especially after, you know, the parents once, then with people twice, and then she kind of just closes on herself.
Right, and then she never really has, like, the place that she wants. Maybe she does with Ender, ultimately. You know, so she's sort of searching for a home on the planet, and Ender's searching for a home for himself and for the Hive Queen. And, of course, the Hive Queen's searching for a home. And they both lost their homes because of the Xenocide. Because, you know, the Hive Queen and her people were, like, literally killed, and then Ender couldn't go back to Earth.
Right.
So, you know, they're both sort of wandering in that way. Valentine found a home for a while on Trondheim. And then left. So I think
I think she was coming with her husband, wasn't she?
Did she bring Jack?
I thought so.
I don't remember.
But
she may have. I don't see why not. But this, I find it interesting to thinking about, like, what makes something a home, what makes a planet a home, what makes a country, a state, a room a home, right? And, like, Lusitania's unequivocally the Piggy's home, right? They originated there. Is it also the colonists' home? You know, is it more reasonable that it's the children's home than it is maybe the original settlers? Does it, like, what exactly is it about the living situation that makes it a home? Novenia's children were living in an abusive household, so can that ever be a home for them? Could that house in that abusive environment ever have been a home? And so I don't know the answer to any of these questions, but I find them very interesting. I think the point, if I was going to put a point on it, that Orson Scott Card would be trying to make with all of these sort of across the board, is that you can find a home ultimately, because everybody does. None of the characters that are searching are left without some kind of answer. I mean, the biggest one being the Hive Queen, who's waited 3,000 years. And then another big theme throughout is guilt and people's reactions to guilt.
That's a big Catholic thing, isn't it? Guilt.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. You know what? That ties into the religion thing, doesn't it? But I mean, we have, because Novenia sort of starts the whole process, the whole thing.
Right.
Because of her feelings of guilt, so she calls for the speaker. Because she wanted the speaker to help her feel better. And she felt guilty. And her whole life was dictated by the fact that she felt guilty.
Right.
About Lebo's death. Or Peepo's death.
Peepo's death. And she also wanted to try to stop Lebo from dying.
Right. She felt guilty about Lebo's death, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure what happened.
He didn't get her files, but he figured it out.
No, he didn't.
Yeah.
He figured something out.
Yeah. These people really got to talk to each other before they go out to the piggies. So, I mean, there's a lot of characters that are... Novenia's guilty. Ender feels guilty.
Well, yeah.
Oh, I mean, come on. Ender's like... dripping, and you talk about goth kids. You have Novenia, and then right next to her is Ender. And the fact that they sort of bond over that.
Yeah.
You know, they sort of relate to each other over that. Like,
well, he kind of, you know, she's been hiding all this stuff, and he just rips it open.
Because truth sets you free.
Right.
So, I mean, I think we hit on all the major themes as we went. I mean, there's
Talk about likes and dislikes.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned before, my highlight for everything is the clues about the pig, what was actually going on with the piggies.
Right. Yeah, I like that whole idea of this weird life cycle and how humans just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I was telling you before we started recording, so I read the story when I was younger, and I remembered almost all the details about the piggies. But I forgot from my first read that the speaker for the dead was Andrew Wiggin. And so I started reading it, and I'm like, this guy seems a lot like Ender. And then it's like, in like his first chapter, it's revealed. And I'm like, that explains why he seems a lot like Ender. I'd totally forgotten.
That's so funny.
Totally forgotten it. But so I was reading it and remembering what the piggies, what the actual reveal was. Almost every interaction with the piggies is like loaded with foreshadowing, and it's just, I think he did such a good job with that. So that's like throughout. So your favorite is?
Well, I liked the life cycle of the piggies. I like the melodrama.
Yeah.
You know, with the how he got the kids to like him, and you know, you kind of see from the beginning that he and Lavinia are gonna become a couple in the end, but the road was kind of.
Yeah, I think the scene where he meets the children is.
I mean, it's one of the best ones. I mean, and they actually make fun of it, you know, because using some pop psychology kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was cute. I like that too. Low light, so least favorite part or thing you didn't like, anything in particular, jump out at you.
No, maybe it was a little bit too much of stuff, and it's like, you know, Jane was a little bit too convenient.
Jane was a great plot device. Yes. She was like, I'm sorry, a plot needs to move forward. Let me step in. I mean, literally, she's like, because the colony would never have united if she hadn't revealed them. Yeah, I think there was a little bit of a, what do they call that? Deus machina?
So, Ghost in the machine?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I don't mind that kind of a character, but...
I mean, I really liked the whole book. I thought some of the writing was phenomenal.
Now, I've read this book several times.
Yeah, so. It's great. So, again, I'm nitpicking. This is, like, the last time we podcasted, I'm nitpicking. I was a little bit thrown, and I don't know why, but I was, this time reading through, I was a little bit thrown off by the fact that Lusitania was a Catholic colony. And, again, I think I mentioned this before, it just sort of was odd to have, like, a future science fiction story be so heavy with a modern religion. And not that that's not possible, but I think what it is that the future science fiction I've been exposed to isn't. You know, Star Trek, there's no like real religion in Star Trek.
Usually. But I mean, you know, if you think about present world, the religions that we have around are a couple thousand years old already. So.
Exactly. Well, that's what I was thinking. I'm like, well, 3,000 years ago, we were starting to do the Christian thing. I think it's fair to say, you know,
I mean, you can say people might want to live in an environment, you know, go back to that old religion, you know.
Yeah. You know, but would it have worked if it was, you know...
I mean, it's not like they didn't accept science.
Right, exactly. But would it have worked if it was like a Greek mythology colony where everybody, you know, like,
there
I
was
don't know.
One in Star Trek.
Yeah. And then I complained before about the husband having access to all of Novenia's files, and I guess the reverse of Nobina having access to all his files is like, all right, I get it, but it's kind of, it just struck me as like a little stupid. I was like, all right, but.
Well, that would be a Catholic thing, you know, they're very peculiar about marriages and stuff.
Again, you know, that section of the Bible that describes when you get access to your spouse's digital files.
Okay, you know.
So in terms of, when was this published?
1986.
Okay, so it's not that old. You've read it a couple times.
Yeah.
For me, it aged well from childhood to now. I don't see anything that's like glaringly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little.
Some of the way they describe the computers is a little bit, you know, yeah. Terminals and with all the holographic displays. Yeah. You know. Mm-hmm.
It's a little heteronormative. And what I mean by that, is that it's very, everyone's heterosexual, everyone's going to get married, everyone's going to have children.
Well, it's Catholic, I mean.
Right, I get that, but, like, there are definitely, there's got to, like, just, like, statistically, there's got to be some gays on the
system. Well, like, you know, El Hado or some one of those kittens.
Oh, the children things? I don't know.
Quinn, probably. Right, yeah. Quinn was like super religious and super straight, so he probably would become a priest, you know.
There you go. So that, I mean, and because of that structure, a lot of plot points occurred. So like, no, like there probably wasn't an option for Novinia just not to get married, because that was an option, right? She and Libo could have just like been lovers who didn't get married.
Not in Catholic kind of a thing.
So it was better for her to have a lifelong affair.
Well, at least she was sinning, you know. So sinning, it was like, well,
yeah.
If you're gonna make sin, you know,
right? So it's kind of like, it's like, I guess this is fine. I don't know. So like, so that was interesting. But I get making it a Catholic colony and using that structure to explore these issues. And
now I'm wondering if it was like, again, introduction. He mentions this book that he read, and it had to do with Catholic religion as well. Oh. It was about a Jesuit priest visiting a planet where everybody's very immoral, there's a very strong sense of morality, but there is no religion.
Hmm.
And he's kind of puzzled by it. And I think that book was mentioned in that science fiction course that we listened to from Great Courses.
Oh, yeah.
But
well, I wonder if the same thing isn't playing out with the piggies. Because we think the whole book that the piggies have spirituality, but they don't. Right? We don't have any actual proof that they have any kind of religion or any kind of spirituality whatsoever. Because all the things we thought were spiritual, talking to the trees, talking to the ancestors, whatever, turned out to just be actually talking to them.
Right.
So you have a Catholic colony of people, of humans, and then you have this colony of piggies who don't seem to have any kind of religion.
Well, I mean, that was another thing. Some of these religious people wanted to go and be missionaries among piggies.
Yeah.
Remember, like the children of the mine and stuff.
Yeah. So I guess if he, I'm curious about the book that he read, but because the piggies, I think the ultimate decision, right, is that the piggies are, what's the word, ramen?
Right.
That they're not verilis.
Verilis, right.
So they're not just beasts.
That's right.
They are ramen. They are like other humanoids.
They're like human,
yeah.
Except a different species. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So that's exactly the conclusion, right, that they do have this strong sense of morality.
They do have souls.
And they do have souls, but they don't have religion.
Right.
Blowing my mind.
Okay. I think we could talk for the rest of the day.
Yes, we could. This is a long one. We'll cut it down a bit.
Okay. So, what's next?
The next podcast we're going to do War of the Worlds?
War of the Worlds, yeah. H.G. Wells. So, yeah. And then we're going to transition to different themes, so right. H.G. Wells is a good spot to use it.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll read War of the Worlds and do the podcast on that. And then we may or may not do a podcast on all the five alien books, or maybe just do a slightly longer one next time. I don't know. I hope people listen to this one because it's a bit longer. This book is great, and it's really complicated.
True. Of course, we gave all the plot things away, so.
You know. Oh, we should have told them at the beginning. Spoilers.
I'll put it in my notes.
Spoiler
alert. But
it's
assumed, you know, this is. But even if you know the plot, it's still fun to read.
Yeah, oh, there's tons of stuff that we had to skip over. And it's just, the writing itself is like so beautiful. I highlighted like 25 things. and they just it's just absolutely fabulous. I know, I liked it. Did you like it?
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Okay.
All right, I think that's it. So we will see you next time on History Universe.
Take care.
So I have a thing for the end of the show, mm-hmm. which is on the previous one, we talked about stereotypical characters,
mm-hmm.
like the woman was the linguist and the man was the scientist.
Mm-hmm.
And can I ask you what your major was in college?
I was an English major.
And what was my major?
You were a math major.
I was my...
Because the patriarchy dictates that I blame the patriarchy entirely.